Lord, may we hear your voice, know your grace, and walk in your truth this day. Amen. Amen. Well, friends, Christmas is here. Hooray! I wonder if your family have arrived. Anyone come in from Queensland? I wonder if your living room is a sea of torn up coloured paper. Yeah, that sounds about familiar. Presents are open, new clothes are on. I can't see any onesies this morning. Christmas is a wonderful day, a day where everything stops, a day when we get to pay attention to what is truly important in our life. I wonder, as you gather today, where you might see or find God in the middle of your celebrations. I wonder if God is inside, around the table, sharing Christmas crackers, or whether God might be outside on the deck, waiting to be let in. Or maybe the whole idea of God showing up for Christmas lunch is just too preposterous to think about. God is way too busy to show up and much too important to be found wearing a silly hat. Or maybe there just isn't a God to show up at all. Wherever God is, Christmas is a mirror to the bigness and the smallness and the mystery of God in our lives. As a minister, I meet lots of people who enjoy telling me about the God that they do not believe in. It usually involves a big old man with a long, scratchy beard who has a predilection to yelling at people to get off the lawn or something similar. Their God is a big, controlling bully, who's frightfully small-minded at the same time. I can see why they want that guy out in the street. I meet others who tell me about the God that they do believe in. This one has a big heart, who loves them, approves of everything that they do, but is polite enough not to get in the way. This God is small enough to stay in the box, come out once a year, and then to go back with all the Christmas decorations. Thankfully, John, the gospel writer, gives us an altogether different picture of God, a God who is bigger than anything we could imagine, and yet small enough to show up around our dinner table at Christmas time. This is a picture of great mystery that is confounding and marvelous. It invites us to discover more. In the beginning, said John, was the Word. For a universe that has been around for 14 billion years, that means God is pretty big. What's more, all the stars and mountains, kangaroos and petunias that we enjoy all owe their existence to the one who holds all things together. Although the universe was once empty, God lit it up with light and life. John then says, God decided to come into the world. Can you imagine that? The timeless one, choosing to have a beginning and an end. The spaceless one, deciding to have a body with arms and legs, teeth and hair. Can you imagine the endlessly creative one, deciding to walk everywhere, and having to use thought and bone and muscle to achieve anything? When the Word became flesh, God did not just come down to become human. God lifted up humanity so that we could share in the divine nature. God took an enormous risk doing this. He took a risk to be born by a teenage mum. He took a risk to be born in a barn, in a strange town, to be greeted not by kings and academics and celebrities, but a bunch of shepherds who look after strays and make sure everyone gets home safe. You'd think that people would have been lining up to see this amazing sight. But when push came to shove, well, most people just didn't give a rat's. They just wanted leaders who would do things their way. They wanted gods who would enforce the rules so that some would be safe while everyone else just went to hell. So why did this big cosmic creating God go to all this bother to become small enough to be born in a barn, to be small enough to sit around our table at Christmas time? The reason is simple. Darkness is the problem. Darkness isn't just when your eyes don't work. Darkness, the thing that the gospel writer talks about, is the thing that bends our lives and our bodies and our minds all out of shape. This darkness goes to work when something good starts, but something awful begins to happen. It's like saying, gee, border security is so important, only to find out that it results in one family with two little girls being sent out to Christmas Island forever. Darkness is what happens when the affection of one partner becomes controlling and coercive. Darkness plays upon our fears, encouraging people to draw ever diminishing circles around them, which simply keep people out. This kind of darkness is so much harder to beat than you think. Because separating good from evil isn't a matter of having God on one side and the devil on the other. There is no line drawn down the middle that separates good people from bad ones. Nor can companies or government policies or political parties be divided in such a crude way, because everything is mixed together. It's like some people say, look, we live in a world where adding ice cream to manure just won't improve it. But the reality is we keep finding small bits of horse manure in our ice cream. It's no good being timeless and spaceless and endless if you're outside of this temporal spatial world, because you're unable to change anything. Flesh and blood problems need flesh and blood solutions. So God sends Jesus into the world, the exact image of God, the one who perfectly reflects God's character, God's heart, God's mind, without distortion. He comes to put wrong things right by entering into this world. He does this simply because none of us are smart enough to do it ourselves. None of us are strong enough, or good enough, or light enough, or fit enough, or rich enough, or masculine or feminine enough. God enters our world at Christmas time to heal our wounds and to stop the destruction that we wreak upon each other from the inside. Now, of course, accomplishing this great work is one thing. Getting people to join in is an entirely different matter. That's why John speaks about God's children. people who are prepared to step inside God's circle so that they can widen it, so that others can join in too. At Christmas, God bridges the gap between reality and potential so that everyone might learn how to love simply, deeply, and authentically. By entering the world, God embraced everyone. And everyone who's imperfect, they get a hug too. And every time we choose to let light enter our darkness to heal our wounds, we stop acting out and hurting others. When God's light shines, we start to value and respect others more. We find ourselves drawing ever bigger circles, not to keep others out, but to make sure they come in. We find ourselves, as God's people, finding God's love within others and in places where we never thought to look before. So at Christmas time, God's glory is seen and encountered around every table whenever love is shared, no matter your age, your heritage, your gender, your orientation. The circle of God's love includes you. So whenever family take the time to travel, God goes along for the ride. Whenever someone takes half the day to prepare your dinner for this great, wonderful celebration, God is there wearing an apron too. When someone buys a gift, no matter how ugly, and when someone opens that gift and marvels at how lucky they are to receive it, God delights in all of that. Whenever someone gives you a hug or just wants to talk when you are busy doing the dishes, God is there with you if you have the eyes and the heart to see. God is big enough to change the world, and yet small enough to sit at your table this Christmas. God is big enough to invite all of us to sit around his table this day. God has prepared for you a feast of glory where love and acceptance abound. So may this Christmas, may you shine with God's love and discover his presence in everyone you meet and in every table you share. Amen.